everyone. Welcome to Stutter Talk, changing how you think about stuttering one podcast at a time. I am Peter Reitzis here with Bob the Expert Kweezle. How's it going, Bob?
Okay, Peter. Hey, you need to stop putting so much pressure on me.
Well, one of our valued listeners wrote us recently about costal breathing, and I mentioned that you were coming on to talk about it. So he's He started referring to you as just the expert. So I think it's going to stick. I think that's very complimentary, and I think it's going to stick. So,
okay. Yeah.
Bob the Expert Kweezle, this will probably be episode 254 for January 23rd, 2011. Bob and I are going to be speaking today about costal breathing, and as you can tell from Bob's new nickname, we will be counting on him to be the expert on all things breathing and stuttering related. Are you up for that, Bob?
Oh, sure, you bet.
Great. Dr. Robert Kweezle is a professor of communication sciences and disorders at Western Illinois University, a person who stutters, a board-recognized fluency specialist, and a fellow of the American Speech Language Hearing Association, and a regular guest on Stutter Talk. So a couple quick announcements at the top of today's show. As the listeners know by now, I'm doing a series on costal breathing, and some covert stutterers and covert stammerers have contacted Stutter Talk about your experiences with costal breathing. But we also want to hear from you very overt stutterers. How has your experience been with costal breathing? Please let us know. StutterTalk@StutterTalk.com. So, Bob, can I just share a quick thing about the King's Speech before we get into costal breathing?
Sure, that's fine.
So, the Stutter Talk recommended or suggested resource of the month for January 2011 is the wonderful film The King's Speech. We've done several episodes on The King's Speech. If you go to episode 240, I spoke to the scriptwriter David Seidler, and episode 238, I reviewed The King's Speech with Taro Alexander, so I'm not going to review it now, but I do want to share something. I had the great pleasure of representing the Stuttering Foundation at a recent luncheon honoring The King's Speech in New York City. I went in the place of Jane Fraser, who is the president of the Stuttering Foundation, and she was unable to attend because of the tremendous snow that's blanketed the country. But this is really exciting. I met and spoke with Colin Firth, who stars in The King's Speech, and I also spoke with Tom Hooper, who's the director of The King's Speech. And the Stuttering Foundation even put up a picture of me meeting Colin Firth at their site, www.stutteringhelp.org. And I was just really struck by how modest and truly touched Colin Firth and Tom Hooper are by the thanks they are getting from people who stutter and the stuttering community. And I just want to share a couple behind-the-scenes things that I learned at the luncheon. So what was really neat is that Tom Hooper and Colin Firth were talking about the importance of getting the sound of stuttering correct. And I think it was Tom Hooper who explained that Colin Firth often had two microphones, one on his body, I guess on his shirt, and then there was the boom mic that was several feet or maybe as many as 10 feet above the body. I think the boom mic is the mic that somebody holds and moves around with the actor. And Tom Hooper said at the luncheon that they really were relying on the boom mic so they were sure to capture all the subtleties of stuttering. And I just thought that was really neat that they took great care to get all the little sounds, the crackling sounds, those little hissing sounds or slightly audible sounds that came out of Colin Firth when he was stuttering. I thought that was really cool. A couple other things they shared. Colin Firth said that The King's Speech is not a movie about a disability. It's a movie about a relationship. And I thought that was a really special way to put it. And one more thing I want to share that, Tom Hooper said something that was really important. He was saying that when they made the movie, it was really important for him that it was made clear that the king was not cured. So in the very final scene of the king's speech, when the king gave the big speech, the king was stuttering, and the king even made a joke about throwing in some stutters just to remind people that he still stuttered. And I thought it was great that the director, Tom Hooper, took such care to make sure that he did not imply that there was a cure for stuttering, and to take care of that, to make it clear that the king was not cured, but that he was working on his stuttering. So Stutter Talks suggested a recommended resource of the month, The King's Speech, out in theaters now, and I encourage everyone to go see it.
I really want to see the movie. I just have to wait for it to get here. I was checking the movie listings this morning. They're showing Gone with the Wind and the Wizard of Oz are the current movies that are showing as new releases here in Macomb. But I'm just kidding. But anyway, it takes a while for movies to get here, and I'm thinking that a movie like The King's Speech, which is up for awards and things like that, will probably be take even a little bit longer. But again, I've heard many positive things about the movie from many people. Again, both people who stutter and people who don't stutter, and so I'm really looking forward to seeing the movie. And as I say, I haven't had a chance to see it yet, given where I'm living. So.
So, Bob, the expert, I would love to speak to you today about costal breathing. This will be the second in three, perhaps even four episodes that we do on this topic. And maybe I'll just say at the top here that costal breathing seems to be very popular in Europe. We just spoke to Angus Heatley, who did a great job, I thought, of explaining costal breathing. What did you think of the Angus Heatley show, Bob?
Well, again, I found it to be a really, really interesting show. I think one of the most interesting shows that I've listened to. All of the Stutter Talk shows are good, but I thought the one with Angus was a very, very good one, because again, I think that when people come on to talk about any kind of treatment, they often want to come on and talk about their treatment as the only treatment, and I think that Angus was very, very balanced in the way that he talked about costal breathing. I think that he also talked about the larger issues of stuttering treatment and the disorder of stuttering and kind of how costal breathing fit into a much larger picture, and he sounded like he was just a really, really good guy, and he was a very, very good guest. And I think that my biggest challenge when I listen to people talk about costal breathing or I read about costal breathing is simply trying to understand exactly how it works. And I think that's probably why I'm here on the show today, because again, I feel like calling me the expert on this topic is probably not correct, because I really don't feel that I'm an expert on this treatment, certainly. That I'll be able maybe just to bring some insight into my understanding of how breathing works, more so than perhaps how costal breathing works.
Yeah, you know, I think those are all at excellent points. And for the listeners who missed the show, stop listening to this one and go listen to episode 252 of Stutter Talk with Angus Heatley, and then come back to this one. I was reading about costal breathing online, and I had several conversations with people I know who have gone through programs that have worked that focus on costal breathing. The very notable programs are the McGuire program and the Starfish Project, both in Europe. And let me just say at the beginning of this show that both of those programs are separate programs. I'm in no way implying that they teach costal breathing in the same way. However, that term costal breathing is heavily associated with those programs. And you know, going through the archives of Stuttering Chat, which is a Yahoo group, I really got the feeling and speaking to people that Costal Breathing is never about just Costal Breathing. It's always about the experience of going through a program where you face your fears of stuttering, where you meet other people who stutter, where you have a really intensive experience, where you spend 3 to 4 days really focusing on not just costal breathing, but on stuttering. So, Bob, I don't know what you think, but I'm getting the feeling that when some people say costal breathing really helped them, what may be more to the point is that an experience they had really helped them.
Yeah, I think that as I say, when I've the things that I've read and the sort of testimonials that I've seen on the internet, for example, and even when you were talking to Angus last week and you asked him to sort of explain costal breathing, I think that people seem to have a hard time explaining exactly what they do when they're using costal breathing. And again, that might be unfair because I think that I have had a limited number of opportunities to read about and try to listen to people talking about costal breathing. But I think that at least the ones I've seen, people talk about costal breathing in different ways and they talk about exactly what they do in different ways. Yet what I seem to see as a common theme that comes through is that people were helped by not only learning this technique, but also learning that they could do something in the face of stuttering, that they didn't have to be afraid of stuttering, that there were people who would help them, there were people who had similar experiences to theirs, that there was a technique that they could sort of fall back on if they felt that loss of control. And so there were a number of things that go way, way beyond just learning this one particular technique that are a part of this treatment that may, in fact, contribute more to the success of the treatment, or contribute as much to the success of the treatment as this one technique that seems to be talked about as sort of the core of that treatment.
You know, let me just sort of go back a step for a second, Bob. I think we're in one of those positions where both people who stutter, we're both speech therapists. You obviously have a lot more experience than I do. And we both are thoughtful people, if I do so say so myself. But we're in this position where it's like a restaurant reviewer when people are saying, oh, this restaurant's great, oh, this restaurant's great. And then the restaurant reviewer comes along and suggests that maybe it's not as good as people think that it is. So literally, from what I gather, thousands of people have gone through a program where they work on costal breathing. And it's very clear that many, many people, you know, say that they've been helped by costal breathing. And I feel that we're in a position where we're trying to sort of piece it apart a bit and try to point out what may actually be the piece of the puzzle that's helping the most or that is helping. Am I making any sense here?
Yeah. I think that's kind of the thing that I was doing was, again, when I was listening to Angus, for example, and he was talking about costal breathing, and then I was trying to understand, well, what is this costal breathing exactly, and what is costal breathing talking about, and again, what I found when he talked to you, what I found probably to be more, I don't want to say more interesting, because again, that isn't fair, but what I found to be compelling was the fact that as he was talking about what he'd been helped with in therapy, much of what he talked about were things that were beyond just the fact that he'd learned a technique, the fact that he'd learned, again, to be more open about his stuttering, to be less afraid of stuttering, to feel more confident as a speaker, to view himself differently as a person who stutters, to feel that he had some support as a person who stuttered.
Yeah, he did talk a lot about that network of knowing the importance of being able to call and speak to other people who stutter.
Right, right. And so I just felt that, again, when you look at this, that there are a lot of other things going on in this treatment beyond just the fact that people are learning to breathe differently. So
yep.
again, I think that maybe we're being unfair, focusing more on the breathing aspects and worrying about trying to understand. It's kind of like we're sitting here doing this restaurant review, and we're worried mainly about one dish, when in fact the restaurant serves many, many other things, and we're just focused more on the one thing that they're known for.
To be fair to us, though, over the years, especially on the internet, because we're here in the United States, so we don't hear so much about coastal breathing in person, but especially on the internet, you hear a lot of people who stutter who are very genuine about their belief that this technique called coastal breathing has helped them. So you do see very thoughtful, insightful descriptions of the therapy, but then you also see people who make statements that are just to the point of coastal breathing is a technique that has really helped me. So that there is also this separation of the technique from the larger experience. So I do think it's important we also have pieced apart cancellations and pullouts and fluency shaping and all other things too.
Right.
Let me read something, sort of an edited comment that I say it's edited because I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I asked Angus to describe coastal breathing on Stutter Talk to people who have never used it before, and here's what he said. When you expel the air from your lungs and you take a short, sharp breath, and then you speak at the top of that breath. Before I continue, I'll say, like, right away what struck me, and I wish I would have said it on the show, is that Angus talked about a short breath, but other people are very clear that it's a deep breath. So, like, right away, it seems that those are two opposite things. But I'll continue. I first of all expel all the air from my lungs, and when my lungs are fully empty, I take a quick breath. It is quite exaggerated, and then you speak at the top of that breath with a strong, deep tone. And it is important to speak with a deep tone because that tends to counteract the tendency to block, and you also try and project your voice. There's a lot in there. So is it all right with you, Bob, if we piece that apart a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Great. And let's just remind everyone, Stutter Talk, Peter Wright is speaking to Dr. Robert Quiesel. So when you take a short, quick, exaggerated breath, does that seem to you to be a productive way for anyone or for a person who stutters to approach speaking?
Well, you know, again, when you think about speech breathing, just sort of what people do when they normally speech breathe, I think the idea of like letting air out of your lungs probably is something that people don't do typically. Again, I don't want to get too bogged down into speech physiology because we would end up using our entire time
sure,
to explain how it works. But the notion is that when we're speaking, that we generally get down to around 35 to 40% of the air in our lungs is about sort of the baseline, if you will, of where we sort of start to talk from, and that's kind of the range that we operate from, if you will. It's what's called rest level. And so when you push air out of your lungs past that point, when you start forcing air out of your lungs past that point, that sort of changes the balance, then changes the pressure, the relative pressure between the atmosphere and your lungs, and actually you then have less air in your lung, less air pressure in your lungs than you do in the outside air. Air wants to actually rush into your lungs then. And so when I hear somebody talk like that, again, as a speech scientist, I say, that sounds to me like what you're doing right there is you're kind of changing the way the system works in a way that maybe is sort of not a way that's going to get you in a position to be able to speak well, because you're going to be fighting the system. And so just sort of as a starting point for speech, that to me doesn't seem to make sense, because you're really at a point where the air pressure trying to, you know, flow into your lungs, flow out of your lungs is going to be sort of fighting, if you will. It just seems like it would make it harder to talk rather than easier to talk.
Right. Now, do you think that by doing this, well, so then it sounds like what you're saying is that using costal breathing is something that is different than, shall we say, regular breathing or breathing that takes no thought?
Well, yeah. I think it's clear that people who are using costal breathing, if you watch the videos, for example, and listen to some of the people who are using costal breathing, that they are working at breathing, if you will. They are putting some effort into breathing. Again, maybe it's an effort that then leads to a positive outcome. But I think that you can sort of hear those for many speakers, not all speakers. And again, I want to be careful here that I'm not making this sound like, you know, I'm saying that this is a bad thing, because that's not what I'm trying to say. But I think that in many cases you hear this kind of quick inhalations that Angus was talking about. I think that when people are talking, you can kind of hear those quick inhalations of air. That are people are using that I think is what Angus was talking about.
Well, you mentioned the videos. In 2009, I believe, there was a BBC report on somebody who was using costal breathing. Her name is Debbie. So let's listen to just a short edited clip from that report so we can hear the breathing that you're talking about.
Debbie Appleby here. Hi. I came into the school a couple of months ago inquiring about...
Now, Debbie, there's no way that you could have done that 8 months ago. Tell me how your life has changed.
Before I went on the course, I wouldn't be able to use the phone and I would start to panic and sweat and get all worked up.
Wayne, you're married to Debbie. What changes have you seen in her?
It's the confidence that she's got now that's been the biggest change. Where she used to fear away from using the phone and everything, she just, you know, she'll pick the phone without even thinking twice now. And again, it's made her look at her career differently. She's got her prospects to move up the ladder now in her career.
I can just get on with my life instead of putting it on hold and thinking, this is how my life is now, you know, and to think, I don't have to suffer now. I can just use the phone now and not have to ask Wayne to do it, and Wayne's like, oh, do I have to do it? You know, and just do things that I can do without asking other people to do it, like going to the doctors, making appointments. I can do that myself. And it's just little things that people take for granted that I can do myself. And before I went on the course, I'm thinking, well, this is my life now and I'm stuck with it. But it isn't, you know. You can do something about it and just push yourself forward.
Okay, so what do you make, so when somebody who stutters, and what's so interesting about that clip, is that, so here you have this person and the reporter talked to her family too. And the consensus is that her quality of life has really improved, and that this person is facing fears and is speaking more openly and really appreciates this change. Isn't there a way that people who stutter can face their stuttering and face these fears of speaking and have a better quality of life without taking these noticeable deep breaths?
Well, I guess the thing that we could argue would be almost any therapy technique is going to lead to something about the speech is probably going to be less than perfect, let's put it that way.
Okay.
So for example, if we use voluntary stuttering or we use kind of glides or pullouts or whatever in speech, there's going to be something about that that's going to be less than perfect, okay? And so You know, even if we're changing speaking rate, you know, if I decide to go to a slower speaking rate, that affects the way my voice sounds in some way.
Sure.
And so the notion might be that we may be hypercritical or hypersensitive, hyper-tuned into these breaths, and in part because our focus when we listen to these audio samples or watch these video samples is we're kind of trying to parse out how are these people breathing, what are they doing differently. So perhaps to us, we might notice things differently. Oh my gosh, look at what they're doing there. They're making those little sort of gasping noises when they talk. And the issue might be, well, somebody would listen to this podcast and say, well, listen to those funky things that Bob Quisel's doing when he's talking. You know, is one any better or any worse than the other? And the answer is probably, well, no. You know, the point is that, you know, I'm trying to live my life as a person who stutters, and I've learned certain things that I try to do to be able to manage my speech and to live my life as a person who stutters. Other people have learned ways to do things as well. And so I guess that the question might be more one of, if that woman has reached a point where, because of this therapy, she has changed in so many positive ways. And the only artifact of that is really the fact that when she talks, there are these little sort of sounds that are made when she's breathing and speaking that are really not that noticeable unless you really are tuned into them. I'm wondering if again, maybe we're being hypercritical and sort of missing the forest for the trees, if you will, because we're looking at this one little aspect when in fact there was a lot of positive change that occurred. And if she's using this technique and the technique works for her and she feels good about it and she feels confident in the technique, isn't that really what the outcome of therapy should be?
What I love about this topic, I said it to Angus, is it's really making me think about the therapy that I do. I don't know if it's making you think about the therapy, Bob, that you do.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll say this to you, and I know we might sound hypercritical, but I can't say enough that it's really clear that many, many people have been helped by programs that use costal breathing. So there's no doubt that people are being helped here. But one of my concerns is that when I work with people who stutter and, you know, I'm using Dean Williams' forward moving speech approach that we've discussed, or when my clients and I are talking about voluntary stuttering and pullouts and cancellations, all of those different but related approaches make sense to me. The rationales and the theories behind them are very solid. I have no problem explaining them to clients. But when somebody comes up to me and they want to know what I think about costal breathing, I can't support you. I mean, the only way I can support using it is that people who stutter say it's helpful. But I'm still not even sure what it is. And when you read and hear so many people talk about it and you're still not sure what it is, like, I can't teach it. I mean, when one person is saying it's a short breath and just as many people are saying it's a deep breath, well, I'm left with, well, they're focusing on breathing, but it's still unclear to me what exactly is going on. I mean, you said to me off air, if I can quote you on that, you said to me, you know, how do you teach someone to breathe without the diaphragm?
Right.
Is that fair to quote you on that?
Yeah, that's fine, right? Yeah, that's fine. Well, and again, I think that gets back to the whole idea. Because I was trying to understand costal breathing as well, and when I was looking at some of the things again on the internet regarding costal breathing, I mean, again, costal refers to the ribs, okay? So costal, you know, costa, intercostal muscles, you know, that's referring to the ribs. Pardon me for being a college professor here for a while, but when I talk to my students, you know, I say things like, you know, when part of the way to understand the human body is to think about it in terms of that, you know, parts of words tell you something. So when you think about the idea of like costal meat refers to the ribs, so intercostal muscles, subcostal muscles, the levator costarum muscles. You know, when you see that word costa, you think of ribs. And so when I think of costal breathing, I think of ribs. But then when I read about costal breathing in some places, they're talking about the diaphragm. So is that the costal diaphragm? So I saw something about that. So then I went to look at what is this costal diaphragm? Well, it's the part of the diaphragm that attaches to the ribs, okay? But it's not like that part of the diaphragm behaves differently than other parts of the diaphragm do, because the diaphragm is like a sheet of muscle at essentially under the ribs, you know, under the lungs, at the bottom of the lungs. And so, again, I'm trying to understand, well, costal breathing, is that breathing more with your chest than with your abdomen? And so, you know, part of it is trying to understand, well, what exactly are people talking about when they're saying costal breathing, and what parts of the system are they talking about? Should the focus be more in the upper chest area? Is that where what they're trying to do is get the person to focus in that place? And so, and then when you think about the idea of a full breath, well, a full breath is going to probably cause you to expand your chest more than a shallower breath would, and you are going to use more of the chest and chest muscles to get a deeper breath than you would with a shallower breath. And so there are a lot of things that I think part of what would make teaching the technique hard would be that maybe terms haven't been defined really, really, really clearly. And so, yes, I think that there are a number of challenges in trying to understand what parts of the body are we talking about.
Those are great points. And I want to throw out one last point before the break. And when we come back, I'd love to get your comments on it. So, Bob, here's something that came up, because I spoke to a bunch of people who use or have used costal breathing, and I asked them all the same question. Explain it to me so that I can know how to use it. So what they would say is, well, it's hard. I'll do my best. You should really buy this book that describes costal breathing. And they're not doing that to make any money. They're just really sincere, like, oh, there's this book that'll describe it. And I'm of the mind that when you speak to adults who stutter, who have gone through a therapy program, they should be able to explain to you what they're doing and how to do it. So I think it's a fair statement that I shouldn't have to go to a book to understand this, that the people who had gone through the program and are really working on it should know how to do it and how to explain it. But let's hold that thought, and we're going to come on back to get your response.
Hi, this is Dr. Walt Manning, and this is Stutter Talk.
Hi, I'm Travis Smiley, and you're listening to StutterTalk.com.
This is Judy Custer, web weaver of the Stuttering homepage. The Stuttering homepage is dedicated to providing information about stuttering for both consumers and professionals who work with people who stutter. The Stuttering homepage, begun in 1994, includes information about therapy, support organizations from around the world, resources for professionals who teach about fluency disorders, an extensive library linking to several books about stuttering that are online, writings from people who stutter, history about stuttering, including voices past and present, where one can listen to many of the pioneers interested in stuttering, links to new technologies and blogs, and much more. Visit the Stuttering homepage at www.stutteringhomepage.com.
Welcome back to Stutter Talk. Peter Wright is here with Bob, the expert, Queasel. 206-666-5340, StutterTalk@StutterTalk.com. Bob, do you think it's a fair standard that I suggest that we should be able to understand and do costal breathing by speaking to people who have gone through these programs, and say that they use it or are using it?
Yeah, I think that when you were talking about that, you know, I keep thinking about the idea of knowing things. You know, one of the lessons I learned as a college professor, in fact, it's a lesson I'm often taught still, is, you know, you don't really know something unless you can explain it to other people, and sometimes maybe when when people listen to me trying to explain breathing on this show, they'll realize I don't know what I'm talking about. But the idea of, like, again, if a person knows how to do something, you know, anything, you know, if somebody says, I know how to open up a document in Word, okay, you know, whatever, something simple like that, you know, they should be able then to not only show you how to do it, you know, but they should be able to sort of explain to you how to do it, and not say to you, well, you need to go look at the online help for Word, or, you know, go look at a book or a manual. I think that, you know, the thing I always say to my students is that when you're studying, study with other people, because the way you know whether you know something is if you can explain it to somebody else. And and I think that, and again, this is not meant to be unfair to the people that you're talking about who you've asked to explain causal breathing, and I say go read about it somewhere else.
And they say it very sincerely too.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's this notion that because it's a very, what's the word? Again, I'm trying not to use, you know, words that sound negative, but because it's a very abstract concept, maybe that's a good way to.
Ooh, that's a great way. So that is really great. It's an abstract concept. Yes.
And so therefore, when they try to explain how it works, it's like, well, I just know that when I breathe differently, it makes me feel more confident about my speech and I get a better outcome with my speech fluency. And I really can't explain to you why that is, but I just know that doing it helps me. And therefore, I use this technique, and it's a good technique for me, but I really can't explain exactly how it works. And that's when I start thinking more about the other aspects of the program and what those might contribute to the positive outcomes apart from just this technique that people learn but can't really, really, really explain. And again, if we go back to the show with Angus, he did, I think, a much better, maybe not the much less not over qualified, but he did a better job, I think, of explaining how he became more confident, more open,
yes.
You know, less avoidant, less covert as a result of having gone through this therapy. He talked more about those things in a way I think that would be easier for people to understand than when he was trying to explain to you how causal breathing worked.
And I don't know if you picked up on it, Bob, but at one point in the show, I asked Angus to repeat himself, and it just seems that most people I know who stutter, it seems pretty universal that when you ask them to repeat a statement or a word, they stutter on that repetition. Is that your case too, Bob?
Yeah, yes, yeah. Right, yep.
So I did that with him, and he paused, and then he repeated it, and he didn't stutter. And as I remember, it sounded like he took a breath. Now, right. I'm not saying the tool worked, but he didn't stutter noticeably unless, of course, you... you know, it is reasonable to say that breath replaced the stutter, though.
Well, the thing I would say is I think I know the point of the show you're talking about, and what I noticed when you asked him to repeat was that he took a little longer before he repeated it, and I think during that time he was trying to use his technique.
Yes,
and
he paused.
And when you asked him and you said, do you use that pause as a way to sort of let the stutter feeling reduce?
Yeah.
Before you go on or something like that.
Yeah, and I'm definitely going to put that clip in right around here. And so the listeners know Bob and I have not heard it in a while, but we are going to put it in here.
For me personally, it does help, and it's a key part of the technique. And I know quite a lot of people do rely on it quite heavily.
What was that last piece? A lot of people...
rely on the deep tone quite heavily.
And you know, that it brings up an important point, is that within this technique of causal breathing, well, is that the technique or is there a technique within it? And from watching videos on YouTube and from even speaking to Angus, I was getting the feeling that pausing is an integral part of the technique, at least for some people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very possible, maybe even probable, that pausing is somehow separate from this entire causal breathing thing. Does that make sense?
Yes. I think that
I've seen again and heard a number of excerpts of people using costal breathing, and again, not a huge number, but I think enough to see that in some cases people will have a little bit longer pause at certain times, and then go ahead and keep on talking. And again, the nature of that pause, I'm not really sure what that is. If sometimes it takes a little bit longer to get that costal breath. I don't want to say get it to work, because that sounds like that sort of voodoo stuff again.
But, yeah.
But to maybe feel like you're at the right point for that costal breath, because again, breathing's very dicey. I mean, breathing and speech, if you have too much air in your lungs, the vocal folds resist the subglottal pressure, and it actually gets harder to get speech going. And so there are a lot of things that go on with breathing and speech, and certainly is one of the ways that you can get your system out of whack pretty quickly. And I think that you probably, if you're using this costal breathing technique, if I understand it correctly, you need to make sure that you are using the technique properly, and that the system is kind of in the right balance, if you will.
Great points. Peter writes us here with Dr. Bob Quisel, who is co-author with Dr. Scott Yuris of the overall assessment of the speaker's experience of stuttering, which is a quality of life measure, as far as I can tell, a very widely used quality of life measure. And Bob's most recent article, an excellent article, is Empathy, Perhaps the Most Important E in Evidence-Based Practice, in the journal Seminars in Speech and Language. Do you notice, Bob, how I'm breaking up the bios during the shows?
we should also mention, if you're going to be shilling for me, that the school age and teen versions of the Oasis are now available. If you order the Oasis now, you get all three versions of the Oasis. So you get the school age, teen, and adult versions all together.
And for new listeners who don't know, what I personally really like about the Oasis is that you're not assessing moments of stuttering, you're assessing quality of life and how people feel about stuttering.
It's actually more than quality of life. It's really more of the under the surface aspects of stuttering. It's the reactions to stuttering. It's the person's knowledge about stuttering. It's how they're able to communicate in daily situations. There are a number of different subsections, but we've been very, very pleased with both the reception that the Oasis has received, and also the fact that people seem to be getting really, really good data from the Oasis, which makes us really, really happy. And I should also mention too that for the school age and teen versions, Scott's colleague Craig Coleman from the University of Pittsburgh was also involved in the development of those scales for the younger kids as well.
And I think it's just so great that you guys are pushing our field in this way, so that when we're doing assessments, whether it's ongoing assessments or an evaluation, we're looking not only at moments of stuttering, but how people feel about stuttering and what they know about stuttering. And it's just so very important. Getting back to costal breathing, after the show I did with Angus, I continued the conversation with him via email, and he's just so thoughtful. And so I said to him, you know, the one question I forgot to ask you, and I really wish I would have, is what do you do when you stutter? And here's what he wrote. Costal breathing is designed to prevent stuttering. You take the costal breath so you won't stutter when you speak. That's why you're supposed to take a costal breath before every single instance of you speaking, irrespective of whether you're having a so-called good day or a bad day. So you're supposed to use it when you're stuttering a lot or when you're not stuttering very much. And then he goes on to say, when you do stutter, and no one's saying that you won't, you're told to just stop speaking and to release the block, just to let it dissipate and not to push through it or struggle with it. So what it sounds like, again, this is just from one person, is that costal breathing is not just costal breathing. It's It's perhaps a totally separate second tool, which is stopping or pausing and letting the stuttering moment pass, or perhaps stopping and pausing and letting yourself recalibrate so you could somehow work through that stutter. Does that make sense to you, Bob?
Right, right. And I think, again, it's the whole notion of trying to reduce that moment of panic, if you will, that occurs, you know, during a moment of stuttering, that whole idea that, you know, that I'm stuck and I don't know what to do. And I think that much of what this therapy involves, it seems to me, is the idea that giving the person who stutters the feeling of control in a disorder that the nexus of the disorder is loss of control. And so the idea is that if you feel that you have something that's going to allow you to regain control when you're speaking, or to maintain control when you're speaking, that essentially is what we're trying to give our clients in any therapy.
Mm, those are excellent points. You know, there's so many things to remind the listeners about. It's my understanding that for the most part, costal breathing is a peer-to-peer type of therapy. So it sounds, from what I can gather, that it's usually taught by other people who stutter, and I guess most of them are not speech therapists, which is fine, but it's also probably one of the reasons why there doesn't seem to be any peer-reviewed research on it. But let me just throw an idea out there, Bob. I'd be really interested if the people doing these programs, if they were possible to do research where the actual speaking technique was changed. So maybe you'd have one group in the study using costal breathing. You'd have a second treatment group who did the exact same program where they're dealing with reducing fears and working on acceptance, and you're with other people who stutter, but that group uses, let's say, pausing or fluency shaping, or you have another group that uses a Dean Williams approach or a classic stuttering modification approach. What do you think of something like that?
Sure. Yeah, I think that's something that would be very, 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 very interesting, because again, what you're trying to do there is kind of parse out what the elements are, if you will. And you know, I think one of the reasons why we don't have a lot of evidence-based practice for many of these treatments is the idea that, you know, how do you ensure that you are administering costal breathing or Dean Williams therapy or classic fluency shaping or, classic stuttering modification in the same way for every client? Because many of these therapies rely on sort of going with the flow, if you will. You know, you get feedback from the client, and based on what the client tells you, then you modify what you're doing in treatment. And so it's hard to say, well, I'm going to administer this treatment in the exact same way for every client that I'm working with, because people respond differently, and we change our treatments based on the way clients respond. And so I think to do the kind of thing you're doing, which is to say, well, we're going to sort of adopt sort of a framework, if you will. We will call it costal breathing. We'll call it Dean Williams. We'll call it Van Riper. We'll call it voluntary stuttering. Whatever we want to call it. And within those frameworks, we will do the treatment kind of as it's meant to be administered. But what we're going to look at is, you know, what kind of changes do we get? The notion being, is it if we offer the other components of the therapy, which are things like peer support, you know, and those sorts of things, do we get similar outcomes regardless of the basic treatment that we're trying to use? Or again, if we were to say, let's teach two different kinds of costal breathing, let's say even. You know, something like that. I'm not sure, but I think those are the kinds of studies that we certainly need to do. But they're a lot harder to design, and I'll also mention they're a lot harder to get published as well.
Sure, of course.
Those are the kinds of studies that I think would be nice to do. Again, getting back to sort of the common factors things you talked about with Bruce Swampo. Wampold the end of last year. You know, again, we're seeing another very interesting show.
But you know, there's so much to bring into this, because I could say to you that, like, right now within a program, it sounds like different clients are using Calster Breathing in very different ways. But I'm also sure when you have an intensive program that takes a Van Riperen stuttering modification approach, I'm sure that different clients are using cancellations and pullouts in very different ways too. And that's hard to control for.
Sure.
So, Bob, I meant to bring up earlier, and I think I sent you, one of the Stutter Talk listeners went through a program that focused on Calster Breathing, and she said I could anonymously share her thoughts. And she said the program really helped her, so I'll call her Susan. And I won't read the whole definition, but when I asked Susan to define Calster Breathing, she wrote, one, the necessity to breathe from your diaphragm rather than from your throat. The idea of speaking slowly with lots of pauses. The idea of releasing the air at the end of every sentence and beginning each new utterance with a deep breath. And this is, to me, what's frustrating, I think, as both a person who stutters and a professional, is, again, this, there doesn't seem to really be a consensus on what Calster Breathing is. Because if she went through the program and the program really helped her, and the second most important thing she says about Calster Breathing is you need to use lots of pauses, it's hard for me to understand exactly what's going on.
Right, right. And it sounds to me like her description of Calster Breathing is quite different than the way Angus described it.
And I'm sure it helped. Again, we're going to go back to it. It seems to be clearly helping people. But for me to turn around and use it, I'm not sure what it is yet. Does that sound obnoxious, Bob?
No. As I say, you know, it's a very abstract concept at this point, at least to us. And again, maybe we're just dense. That's very possible.
It is very possible. Although, if we are dense, then you would be the dense expert, which would also be possible, I guess, right?
If there is one thing that I'm an expert on, it's dense.
So yeah,
I will claim that title. But anyway, I just think that it just seems that again, if people can say, well, it's sort of the same end achieved by different means, that isn't necessarily a bad thing.
So, Bob, here's one last question. It's probably a big question, but why might Calster Breathing therapy work, or why does it work for so many people?
Well, again, I think that we can look at this therapy in a similar way to many, many other therapies, and that would be that it's not just the technique, okay? I think that the technique is important. I think that, as I talked about earlier in this show, and I've talked about in other shows I've been on, and we've talked about this, certainly you and I have talked about it in informal ways as well, the idea that I believe that, you know, the core of stuttering is loss of control, okay? And so when we're dealing with our clients in therapy, we're trying to help them to overcome loss of control, overcome the feeling of loss of control, to give them tools, if you will, that make them feel more confident that if they do experience that loss of control, they're going to be able to regain the control, and or they're going to have skills that will make it less likely that they're going to lose that control. And I think that most of the things that we do in therapy are really designed to help our clients to do those two things, you know, either maintain or regain control of their speech. So when you look at this technique, you say, well, this Calster Breathing gives people a technique that makes them feel more in control of their speech. And again, we look at other techniques, you know, pausing. What is it about pausing that makes people more fluent? Well, we're not really sure. What is it about, you know, making a person more knowledgeable about their speech, a Dean Williams approach? You know, what is it about pullouts and preparatory sets and cancellations that makes a person, you know, able to be more fluent. Well, in many cases, it's just the fact that you learn a technique that helps you to see that maybe the bad thing that was going to happen doesn't happen. The bad outcomes you expected don't happen. You're able to speak better than you thought you could. Those sorts of things. And so I think that that costal breathing as a technique is part of the therapy. And I think that when you get down to it, the bottom line is it's a technique that helps people to feel more in control of their speech.
Jan, please go ahead.
Well, and that's one part of the therapy. But then you hear people like Angus talk about the therapy and other people talk about the therapy. There are other components as well. There's the acceptance of stuttering that people learn as a result of this treatment, which is also things they learn in other treatments as well. Being more open about stuttering, not letting the little stutters bother them, not feeling quite as bad about themselves when they stutter, those sorts of things.
Stuttering on purpose, you know.
Right, stuttering on purpose. There you go, right. You know, putting stuttering in context, going out and talking to people that you wouldn't talk to otherwise,
yes.
to take risks, to do things you wouldn't have done before, you know, because the therapy encourages you, pushes you to expand your comfort zone, and then you go out there and you go, gee, I never thought I could do this before, but now I've gone out and I've talked to strangers, or and I've stuttered, or I've you know, asked people questions, or whatever it might be.
Yeah, and you said to me on or off air the huge acceptance component that comes with all of this.
Right, exactly, yeah. Right. And then the other thing that comes into play here, I think, is the fact that, as we talked about earlier in the show, that you then are at the end of the therapy, you have a support network. You have people that went through the therapy with you, or you have people that you can contact who will help you if you hit some of those rough spots. You have peers, if you will, who you can talk to, who will help you through those rough spots. Again, it appears that this costal breathing therapy relies a lot on these sort of tune-up sorts of sessions, these refresher sessions that people can go to if they're having trouble. And so you can get support from your peers if things aren't going well. So you're not just done with therapy and then you're out on your own, but you have other people that you can fall back on. And I think that those, again, are common things in many, many therapies that we do with people who stutter. It's not just this therapy, but I think the notion of a technique that people can use and feel comfortable with, the notion of being more accepting of stuttering, to be more willing to take risks, and then having some kind of a support network after you're done with therapy, I think that those three things probably combine, and they probably can combine to different degrees for different people who have gone through the program. But I think that all three of those things play at least some role in the success that people experience in this program. And I even though we talk about breathing and maybe breathing as being a very important core component, I think that there's a lot of other things going on that probably contribute to the success and the long-term success of this kind of a treatment.
Yeah, I think you said that extremely well. Perhaps I'll just reiterate a point I made earlier, which is that, like, right now I can't in my own practice promote costal breathing because I'm just not sure exactly what it is. But what I can certainly do, and I've always been open to this, is if I see a client and we're exploring their stuttering and I feel that they're stuttering like any other behavior, I'm sorry, that they're breathing like any other behavior may be unproductive, then I'm certainly willing to explore breathing with a client. I will say to you and to the listeners that it's generally not a major focus of what I do, but certainly there may be some clients who would benefit from that. I will say to you, and again, like, I'm not trying to, quote, disrespect this therapy, but when I was speaking to somebody about this show that we're about to do now, I just sort of said, you know what's really tough for me to get, Bob? I didn't say it to you, I said it to somebody else, but I'm saying to you now, Bob, what's really tough for me to get is when you create a problem, a program, and you're working under the assumption that everybody needs to do costal breathing, or everybody needs to do a cancellation, or everybody needs to do X, Y, and Z, I'm not so sure how, you know, we come to that decision that everybody needs to do costal breathing. And then I only say costal breathing because that's what we're talking about right now.
Right.
That does concern me. That's not how I do therapy.
Right, right.
But I will say again, there's lots of programs out there. You know, there's programs where everybody does fluency shaping. There's programs where everybody does stuttering modification and voluntary stuttering. So in no way are we picking on the costal breathing folks.
Right, right. And as I say, I think all that we're trying to do is kind of parse this out and sort of understand exactly what is going on here. And I think you mentioned this when you first started talking to Angus in the last costal breathing show, and that is that you're trying to approach this both as an SLP and a person who stutters. You're trying to sort of understand how it works, and that's exactly the way that I'm trying to do it too. In fact, the thing that I've really gained from doing the show with you is that I've been trying to do some research, and I've been trying to understand this, and it's really helped me to sort of understand more about this therapy. I still can't say that I really know about what the costal breathing technique is, but I certainly know a lot more about what the entire therapy approach is. And I feel a lot more comfortable and confident about the therapy approach as an overall technique that is designed to help people who stutter, because it addresses a lot more than breathing.
I think you're right. I mean, it's very possible that there are speech therapists or people who stutter who teach it in isolation, but as of yet, I haven't heard of that being done.
Right.
But I want to encourage people who have gone through programs where you focus on costal breathing to write us stuttertalk@stuttertalk.com or to give us a call 206-666-5340 and just share your experiences, whatever those experiences are with costal breathing. And Bob, I fear we should stop this show now because we can just go on and on and on and on. So this is Peter Reitzes. I've been speaking with Bob, the expert. Kweezel, what was that movie where there's the character who was just the dude? Oh, I can't think of that. I think it was a Coen Brothers movie. There's just the dude. Well, Bob, the expert, Kweezel, thank you. I hope you will continue coming back on Stutter Talk and helping us work through these topics.
Any time at all, Peter. I'll be more than happy to be on the show.